All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So today, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about hiring people in Japan, if you ever wanted to hire someone to help you. And there's many considerations. But first, I'd like to tell you why listen to me. You know, who am I? So I co-founded a company which helps foreigner setup companies and hire talent in Japan. The last 15 years, I've helped pretty much nearly 2,000 companies do that. I also founded a travel company. We handle about 800 to 2,000 guests a month. And we hired 120 people there. So plenty of hiring experience there. And also building two software companies, hired and managed people for those businesses. So doing it all in Japan. Japan hiring is a little bit different than other parts of the world. I'm not sure how much everyone knows, but it's different. I was thinking when Ziv asked me to do this, I was like, how can I make this contextual? How can I make this valuable? So I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit about the history. And I think understanding history may help you understand, you know, what the mindset of people, if you weren't ever wanted to hire a Japanese person to help you, what their mindset might be. So, you know, just real quickly, after World War II, post-war reconstruction, there was a lot of labor unrest, companies wanted stability, and workers began to get stability. Then the 1950s and 70s, I mean, Japan was just dominating. And, you know, manufacturing needed loyal, stable workers. The Toyota Corolla 1966, global bestseller of a car. Who remembers Sony Walkmans? The Trinitron TV. I looked up how to pronounce that. The Trinitron TV. Sony was killing. Oh, there was tons, you know, Panasonic, Toshiba, the list goes on. And things were good. Things were good. And then here comes the bubble era. That's a picture from the 80s. People were having a good time. There's the old saying that back then you had to hold up 10,000 yen bill just to get a taxi. I think that's true. But, you know, the party was going to come to an end. Life and employment was continuing to be supported. This is for decades after World War II. Mid-career hopping was super stigmatized. If you wanted to move companies mid-career, you're shunned. And it's not, don't do that. Like when LinkedIn came to Japan, if you put your profile on LinkedIn and your manager found it, you were like harassed. Like, it's just don't move your job. But again, workers were still expecting stability. But then, you know, 1990 rolled around and the Bank of Japan really increased interest rates and the bubble burst. And there was a big hiring freeze and there was a pressure to reduce the lifetime employment guarantees. That was all reality. And workers began to experience instability. And this was a new thing. They were like, what just happened? But then, you know, globalization priority of Japanese companies led back to bilingual talent needs. Job hopping started to become less of a stigma. Aging population started to become a problem. And then Lehman shock again. So worker instability. This is, you know, like again, again, right? Then a really strange thing started to happen. So between 1995 and 2015, the number of people in the workforce age, in 18 to 65, declined by 5 million people. So there's more people, you know, the lives are ending than beginning. And so the working class was shrinking. And, you know, we started to experience ultra low unemployment rates, more job openings than job seekers. Did you hear that right? More job openings than people that were looking for a job. And then there was still more overseas expansion, whether that was companies coming into Japan or companies expanding out of Japan. So there's all this demand on talent, but no talent. And employees started to be in the driver's seat for the first time, in basically the last century. And, you know, they were given better salaries, more flexibility, benefits got better. And then, COVID, another shock, hiring freeze again, pivot to digital roles. And there started to be a cultural shift to hybrid work. And, you know, it was such an interesting time because one of my neighbors was a foreign company and he was working from home and we were having coffee one day and he was just like, you know, don't tell anybody, but I really like working from home. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, me too. it was like, you know, still kind of a stigma to want that. And, you know, now we're moving forward in the post-COVID era. Lifetime employment still is a thing, you know, for older generations, still a thing for, you know, big Japanese companies, but it's less popular than ever. And as a cultural shift, the Japanese seek purpose, flexibility, career progression, more openness to mid-career changes, and employees in the driver's seat, you know, than ever before. So I think, you know, there was this big shift before. Employees would go in, the employers were in charge, lifetime employment, everything's fine for your whole life, and then you retire. Now there's been this pendulum swung the other way. And now talent really understands that they have a say in their career. I think it's important for you to know before you go in to try to talk to people to work with you. So why is Japan unique? Kind of summing it up, that tradition for lifetime employment and loyalty, still there. You know, I mean, I hire younger people in my companies, and there's still like, the loyalty is still important. You know, there is that, you know, sense of lifetime employment. It's like still lingering, but, you know, not as much as before. The labor laws of Japan were partially written by the U.S., and they're very employee-centric. You know, there's a unique cultural reward system. Seniority is traditionally rewarded. You know, the longer you stay in the company, more money you make. Now it's more about performance, slowly changing. Group harmony is still a big cultural, theme, but it conflicts with, performance-based hiring. So there's always conflicting things in Japan, right, happening right now. There's this shift. And then, like the new generation, they prioritize the work-life balance, purpose, career mobility. And the Japanese employee mindset. So again, stability and job security, key motivators, despite all these changes. Respect for hierarchy and teamwork still there, despite all these changes. And preference for clear guidance and defined roles, super important. So if you want to hire somebody and you say like, listen, you're going to do A, B, C, and then like anything else that comes up, they're going to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. hold on. Can we talk about this more? Well, they want really defined roles most of the time. So if you did find if you were looking to hire somebody, how do you find them? Of course, in a personal network, job fairs are big here. There's job boards like Gaijin Pot and World. Professional network platforms like Facebook and LinkedIn. Many people don't realize that in Japan, one of the biggest professional networks, even bigger than LinkedIn, I think still, is Facebook. And that was because when Facebook entered Japan, Facebook made a deal with Recruit, one of the biggest recruiting companies, to basically anybody that signed up for their database got a Facebook profile. So a lot of recruiters, knowing this, hunt for great talent on Facebook, not LinkedIn. There's also job platforms like Wanted to Leave, BizReach, CareerCross. Of course, you can hire a company to help find people to work for you. If you really can't find the talent, you can get temporary staffing through a service called Haken. That's temporary. It's good and bad. I mean, Haken basically allows you not to be subject to Japanese labor law, but these people aren't so dedicated to your company. And then one of the gems of Japan is Hello Work. It's the unemployment office. You can get great gems and people there because you have to pay a fee to find them. You get the whole database. You just sign up with Hello Work and you can look through and reach out to people. Gem. We found gems there. Bilingual people. It's amazing. And then the recruitment process outsourcing is kind of a new trend where you hire a company, come in and hire a lot of people for you if you wanted to hire a lot of people. So you find them. How do you contract with them? There's this seishin kind of category where there's no end date to the contract. It kind of goes till retirement, and that still like has deep roots in lifetime employment. So labor law still is kind of representing lifetime employment more than this kind of performance based theme these days. But if you didn't want to do that, it sounds kind of scary. Then you can have fixed term where you set an end date, and then if they weren't doing great, you can just not renew it. So these are two kind of ways to hire people. There's also dispatch workers. So again, Haken, like I mentioned before, where you hire an agency to send somebody to work with you. Part-time is called arubaito, where people work not full-time hours, like less than 40 hours a week. There's gig workers through platforms that you can hire. And then if you don't have a company, no problem. You can do an independent contractor contract, or you can hire a company to hire them for you. It's different, a little different than Haken. Basically, they'll hire them as like a seishin or keikushin, contract worker, full-time worker, lifetime worker under their company, something my company WeConnect does. And then, when you hire them, you need to understand what you need to put in place so that they feel comfortable. So, you need the contract, need the job description, salary and work hours, and you need to enroll in social, give them social benefits. This is like basically a must. Of course, there's the monthly salary, and then, sometimes they expect bonuses 2 times a year. That's a little bit more traditional. 1 time a year is still kind of becoming okay now. Commuting allowance, not statutory, but culturally expected. So if they're commuting from their home to wherever they need to work, giving them the commutation allowance, tsukin, is basically a non-taxable benefit to pay for the bus or the train. Retirement allowance, not everybody expects this, but some more senior hires would maybe bring it up, which is basically guaranteeing them a lump sum payment if they retire or leave the company. And then, of course, pay raises will be expected. These are the social benefits. So in Japan, if you hire someone under a company, or if you hire them independent contractor, these benefits would need to be accessed. If you have a company and you hire them, you have to provide these 100%. So that's health insurance. You know, social benefits in Japan is amazing. You know, I went to get an MRI a couple weeks ago, paid, you know, 7,000 yen. It's a lot cheaper than other countries. But health insurance is great. Pension, I'm not going to lie, it's kind of not the best, but you got to pay, but it's more like a tax. I'm not sure if you'll ever see it eventually, hopefully, but we'll see. But your pension is basically a tax to pay for the pension system. And then unemployment insurance, if you do get let go as an employee, then essentially the government would pay 3 to 11 months over the course of those months in a partial, like a fraction of your salary. So they kind of take care of people that lose their jobs. You know, remember Hello Work before? People that go to Hello Work get this. That's good. And then workers' compensation. This is amazing. If you get hurt going to work, hit by a bus, whatever, something falls on you at work or leaving work, you can be taken care of at the hospital for up to 2 years. These insurances are good. And then, yeah, company welfare packages as well. So how much does that cost? So if you want to hire somebody for, like, you know, let's easy numbers, like 10 million yen a year. You can hire people for much less than that, and they'll be amazing, but easy numbers. 10 million yen a year. Then you have to add on 1.6 million or 1.56 million yen to the cost of hiring that person. Okay. So the employer would pay an additional 15.617% on top of gross salary, and the employee would be deducted 14.655% from their salary. This is quite a considerable cost, but again, the system, pretty good, pretty reliable. Yeah, and then, so what are they expecting? Again, those insurances, paid leave. This is non-statutory commutation allowance. They would expect this, but it's not statutory. They're not going to expect private pensions unless they're very senior. And then other supplements, of course, not going to be expected unless very senior. But what are the pitfalls? So, you know, if you hire an independent contractor, but you treat them like an employee, guess what? They're an employee. And if you have a labor dispute from the eyes of a judge, they're an employee. So if you hire a contractor, make sure you hire them as an independent contractor by setting specific role and not judging them based on how many hours they work, like basically a task or a job to get done every month, for example. And then, you know, lack of written contracts clarity and job expectations. This is going to be a big hurdle. You really have to be clear on what they're going to have them do and align with them on that. You know, if you are a bigger company and you want to kind of put global HR policies in Japan, that's sometimes hard to do. And then underestimating the cultural onboarding needs, it can be a big pitfall as well. So you really have to understand the culture of Japan to make this a smooth process. So best practices, you know, you can hire a firm to help you manage all this. WeConnect does that. Or you can hire a bilingual HR person to help you if you don't speak Japanese yourself. Again, offering clarity, structure, stable compensation, building that, you know, trust, long-term relationships, big theme in Japan, respecting local customs, while gradually introducing new ideas is a good practice. And then, you know, clear career path and visibility, even in small teams. So yeah, again, reminder of how the market is changing. So increase in foreign workers and returnees, because again, the labor, the population of the labor force is lowering because of the aging population. Startups, SMEs are attracting younger talent. So again, back to that purpose, flexibility, people driving their own careers, you know, younger generations are going to do things a little bit more meaningful for them. Hybrid and remote work gaining traction. And again, performance-based culture becoming more acceptable. So what happens if it doesn't work out? How do you let them go? If you looked up anything about labor law or hiring Japan, this is a kind of a big theme that it's hard to let people go. Essentially, you know, what it boils down to is if they do gross misconduct like theft or violence or something even more terrible, let them go. Or if there's a significant operational need like bankruptcy, major layoffs, then it's okay. Otherwise, you know, it definitely takes a lot of time to prove objective, reasonable grounds for dismissal, that dismissal was socially acceptable. This determination has to be socially acceptable among your colleagues. Like, oh my gosh, right? Or the termination may be invalid. Generally, this is kind of like the technical legal approach letting people go. But the more practical way to let people go is to encourage voluntary resignation with like a severance package. you can kind of offer them outplacement services, let them write their own narrative. It's a very psychological, empathetic, compassionate approach. That's definitely my preference for like WeConnect's clients. And then, you know, you can also reassign the less desirable roles. You may hear stories from the past where large Japanese companies really wanted to let someone go, couldn't do it. They got reassigned to the Sapporo office. And then, you know, that has happened. Don't do that. Be more empathetic. And then you also can use fixed term contracts to manage the risk more instead of basically hiring them under Safe Cheyenne and lifetime employment. Okay. And just to give you a little bit more context, you know, like letting people go in Japan versus the States. So can you fire for poor performance? Very difficult. I would say, don't say that unless you have some help or helping you say something else. And then, you know, in the US, it's easier, but you have to avoid illegal reasons like discrimination. Severance legally required, no, but common in negotiated exits. Again, negotiated exits, compassion. In the United States, no, unless it's under contract or with a union. Culture toward termination, very stigmatized, avoided if possible, and in the U.S. relatively normal. Risk of a lawsuit, high if the due process isn't followed, and more moderate, mostly, again, tied to discrimination, gender, race, sex, things like this. And the common workaround of all these things is voluntary resignation, again, or reassignment, voluntary resignation, compassion. That's the best way. Performance plans, documentation to reduce legal risk is another thing that US uses to basically reduce the legal risk. You don't have to do that, but it helps reduce risk in case there is a dispute later. And the final takeaway is, you know, hiring in Japan is unique. It's not this. This is a unique place. I just met some people that just moved here. You, sir, very unique. I'm sure you're seeing it's very unique. You know, invest in time and understanding employee expectations. Legal compliance and cultural alignment are key. And, you know, a thoughtful approach can attract loyal, high-performing talent. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to hire somebody, do it with a little bit of care and make sure you understand, you know, what you're getting into. Hopefully you hire someone that's really helpful. But if you don't, compassion. All right. Yeah, well, thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Yes, sir. Oh.
Hey. Where is the current I had 7 classes.
Sure.
What is the common severance package if you need to have somebody voluntarily resign?
Yes. Typically, it's about 1 month for every year of tenure. If you do it in a compassionate way, you could probably pay a little less. But I would just say that's probably a good metric to go with. If you give 1 month for every year of tenure and you're compassionate, empathetic, and you're like, it's not you, it's me, then usually you can get out of it.
Employ yourself. So do all of these sorts of things also not you? They don't. Okay.
You cannot protect yourself under labor law as the owner of the business.
But I mean in terms of all the social benefits.
Yes. Let me go back to that slide because there's a difference.
You can repeat.
Maybe you would like to repeat it. Yeah. And maybe he would. I don't think I got it the first time.
Sorry about that. If you own your own company and you want to employ yourself, do you qualify for all the social insurances, et cetera?
Great. So if you have your own company and you employ yourself as like a seishin, then you will get these two. Right, because that's assuming you're what's called the Daihyo Torishimayaku. If you have a KK or a Shokumu Shikosha, if you're a GK, you're the listed director on the shiny piece of paper that you get out of the Homokyoku, the Legal Affairs Bureau. Go to the kiosk, punch it in, get it out. It's all shiny. Your name's there. You only can get these because these are for protecting for getting fired. You're gonna fire yourself. and this one would be vastly taken advantage of. You know, because there's a lot of fraud if this was part of there. But basically, labor insurance is for people that you're hiring. But everyone gets these. Yeah, they are fantastic. They're good insurances.
Can you just hire people as a independent contractor?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can have an independent contractor, no labor law there. But if you treat them like an employee and you give them vacation days, they're an employee, regardless of what you did in the contract. So, but you know, you can take as much risk as you want.
but they just don't have work during that week or whatever, right?
So technically, an independent contractor should be given sort of like a scope of work to be done every period. And if the independent contractor is only for a certain like 3 weeks or something, your risk is basically zero anyway, right? But if you have an independent contractor that works every month doing basically the same thing, or that's also fine. But if you treat them like an employee where they're doing their scope and then you're like, oh, wait, by the way, can you get my like dry cleaning? Can you get my coffee? Can you do these other things not in your contract? Oh, you need a vacation day? Okay, take a vacation day. Then that's an employee. And so, but again, that only would become a problem if you get in a dispute with them. But technically, you can't treat them like an employee as an independent contractor, because there's been a lot of problems. As an independent contractor, when you hire people, the cost of this is basically nothing, right? Because as an independent contractor, they have to go to their kyoksho and get their own their own personal national health insurance and national pension. So the company doesn't have these costs, right? So that's why if you treat them as an independent contractor, you really should, you know, keep it within their scope and not ask them to do different things. Don't give them vacation days. Otherwise, technically, you should be providing them this.
Got one question from the stream. I once heard it's not common to hire a temporary person to cover maternity coverage in Japan, and maternity leave is long. 1 year, I believe, it's not really a question.
Okay. So they're saying you've heard it's not common to hire you mean like no, you should definitely hire. So you shouldn't replace them, but you should get someone to help while they're gone. Yeah, you could hire someone to do their job while they're gone, but you have to bring them back. I think it's a little less than that, but I'd have to check.
I've got a quick question following on from, if you are the daihyo, for tax reasons, is it better to be classed as a seishin on your personal income tax, or are there some tricky-dicky salaries that you can take advantage of as a daihyo? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, technically, if you're the daihyo and you're paying yourself, you have to be in these insurances, and there's not a way to avoid these technically. It's all going to be personal income anyway. So your personal income taxes will still be the same. A lot of people ask me, like, if you're the daihyo, can you pay yourself as an independent contractor, like as a service provider to the company? Technically, no. I know people do that, but technically, you still have to be enrolled in these.
With independent contractors, is it possible to give them a performance-based salary, like based on commission, for example, or is that not really allowed with an independent contractor?
I'd have to check with my technical team on that one. Good question. So I will say this. I don't want to answer that question because I'm not sure. I want to ask my technical team. I'll ask them for you. But I will say this, I've been part of tax audits where the tax bureau has looked at that and it was okay. So I've said, and it was right there. It was my company. I was like, and they were like, yeah. So I think it should be okay, but I'd have to check.
Okay, so if you have a worker that works as a contractor, and then you pay them the koyohoken, is any liability like that I have to pay all the other insurance? Because I don't. I only did that on just because I wanted to help them if they have an accident.
So you're saying that they're paying the kyoksho directly and you're just paying them?
No, I pay the koyohoken for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they come to work in the bicycle. So I was concerned if they have an accident, I have liability, but they only construct, they're not.
Are they Keiakushain or are they independent? Are they Keiakushain or they're independent?
They're independent.
Again, I think I have to check with my technical team. I don't want to say anything. I'm on the stream here. This is going to be forever. so I want to check. I would say turn? Probably not. Because let me check.
We got one more from the stream. How long can you hire an independent contractor before they're considered an employee?
Yeah. So you hire independent contractors as long as you treat them as independent contractors forever. The problem is when you hire a Keiko Cheyenne. Keiko Cheyenne has an end date. And if you do, you know, Keiko Cheyenne for 6 months and then a year, once you get to 5 years, they have to become Sei Cheyenne. If they request it, technically, but they would, yeah, at 5 years, you have to switch from Keiko Cheyenne to Sei Cheyenne. Keiko Cheyenne is contract employee where there's an end date. So you hire them with, you start this day and it's going to end this day. So your labor law is only limited to that period. But if you hire them as Sei Cheyenne, there's no end date. So you basically are hiring them until they retire, unless you compassionately separate from them. Hey, telling you, it's going to help you.
I got one question.
Yeah, hang on. Mic coming. Oh, you got it?
So, yeah, so you can hear me. Quick question. So I missed the start of this. Can you just tell me about sort of WeConnect briefly and what other, you're talking about employment and recruiting. So if a Daihi or Shao wants to hire people and sort of engage your service, what is it that you sort of provide?
Let me see if I can do a quick adjustment here so I can have a visual aid.
Okay.
People are using Outlook.
I know. So I'm just going to put the presentation on the desktop for easy access.
Yeah.
There. Basically what WeConnect does, we help foreign companies or foreigners that want to set up companies establish the KK, GK, could be a branch office if they have a company in the US, want to branch it here. We do nonprofits like Ippon Shodan Hojin, MPO Hojin, Quick Zaidan Hojin, all these different things. So all these legal structures to have a company, we do. And then when you have a company, there's certain compliance items you have to take care of. Like you have to register with the tax office, certain things. If you want to hire people, you have to register for social benefits. And then we can set up a bank account, also do all the accounting in the cloud in English. And then all the tax filings, with access in the cloud in English. So it's really a service focused on helping people that value English, that value a razor sharp back office so they can see all your money, your financials, everything like this. And we're just helping make that part of the business easy so that you can focus on the success of the business.
And there's also an HR
recruiting service. Yeah, so we're helping with the payroll, social benefit administration, HR advisory, labor law advisories. We have labor lawyers on staff that can help write these contracts and make sure you're compliant.
Awesome, thank you.
I'll just add from personal experience with Matthew's company, there are a lot of contractors in Japan who do portions of what WeConnect do. So for example, Kaku Accounting, who are sponsoring this event, are very good accountants. Shimizu-san is going to be speaking tomorrow, can help you incorporate a company. But if you want everything done in the one go and without having to pay individual contractors or having to pay, for example, a representative director to be placed so that you can open a bank account, then they're not cheap, but they make things much, much, much easier, simpler, and it's all in-house.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're not the cheapest, but we think we're still pretty fair. But yeah, the one-stop shop back office support, it does take a little bit of extra cost to make it good for the client.
In my case, I have a company as well, and we hire a lot of foreigners as well from abroad. We bring them and make the visas and stuff. I just had a question, because as the company, from the company side, we had a case in which we had a contract with a client for, 3 months of sending the person to the client's office, basically. Mm-hmm. And this person basically decided to resign or almost before the sending started, actually. But the contract was already in place. And yeah, I mean, this person, you say, I'm going to go to Osaka or something like that, you know. And how do you know, I mean, like, how would you approach like this kind of problem, like, to protect, like, I mean, in our case as a company, we don't really have protection because they can just say, okay, I'm going to just go and leave, you know, before 1 month. Yep. But hey, there's already like a contract in place. And I mean, how can you do that, you know, in a way? How will you approach this kind of compassion thing with this kind of issues?
Oh, I mean, hopefully you have a good relationship with them and maybe you could appeal to them and say, hey, like, can you stay around for this 3 month project? I don't know if there's any legal repercussions you could place on them. Like you said, yeah, I mean, I like to think doing business, I do all my work up front, you know, before choosing the people to hire, people to, you know, put on the front lines of the business. I really align expectations because it just avoids surprises. And I'll do it to the point where, you know, I'm saying things. It's like, I love this. I'm like, I love you, but I'm going to be honest and you're going to run away. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's really any contractual, you'd have to talk to like a law firm to like understand if there's like commercial ways to like have repercussions on these people. But at the end of the day, like a 3 month project, I don't know how much it's worth to your company, but it may not be worth it to enforce anything you put in place anyway. So it's kind of tough. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah. I mean, at the end, I wish I had a better answer. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I mean, they basically just left. We have to apologize to the clients. Hey, I'm sorry, we cannot provide this anymore. And just, but there's like really no protection or anything that we can actually enforce or do, you know?
I don't think there is.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Sorry. Thanks.